The title of tonight is called Bucket Drop Healing. How about them apples?
Bucket Drop Healing.
Yes.
I hope you said bucket.
I said bucket. B-U-C-K.
That's what I thought.
Okay. When we ended Sunday, everybody got caught up in discussing alternatives versus options. So therefore, we didn't discuss bucket drop healing. And we did, or we didn't discuss bucket drop living either, same way. We had options on the schedule to talk about this, but we really got so involved in options versus alternatives. So here's a question here. Which sounds better to you? Begin again living or begin again healing, or bucket drop living and bucket drop healing? I'm asking about the name, not a different healing or living. Just consider the name.
Are we going to have a discussion of what bucket drop means?
Absolutely. So I'm just asking you, before we even discuss bucket drop, the question is, which sounds... Whoa, that must be something interesting. Bucket drop sounds sort of funky or something, whatever, whoever. I'm asking you, which name do you like best? Because obviously we talk about begin again living and begin again healing. Now I say, how about if we call it bucket drop living and bucket drop healing?
There is a certain attraction to find out what that is about and talk about it.
Well, the other thing you have to consider is, supposing you're a medical professional and you had your sign that said Chinese medicine and bucket drop healing.
I suspect that you would not have a lineup.
Or for Karen there, body massage and bucket drop healing. The whole concept of options, sort of as we discussed it, and the descriptionary. Hey, by the way, we're going to have some fun tonight, I hope, in all of this. This is not serious shit. I mean, it is serious stuff, but you can see from the start that we're entitled to have some fun. Anyway, when we talked about options, I wasn't talking about, if we want to consider this in terms of healing, I wasn't talking about options as opposed to alternatives. Standard healing is alternatives. Bucket drop healing is options. Is that okay?
Okay. Let's talk some more.
Okay. And speaking of living, if you believe life is a process, not a destination, you're in deep, deep trouble. How's that?
I think that's quite that's appropriate to say.
Okay. Now what I want to do is, I want you to understand, you Chinese medicine folk and all you other guys, keep giving me and glorifying your process by saying, telling me it's long history. So I want to talk to you about bucket drop healing and Bucket Drop Living by talking about its long history.
It goes back at least an hour, doesn't it?
A little more than an hour. Well, let's turn it back to 1840. We now have Ann and Mark here. Let's go back to 1840. In Indian country out west, where the wagons are all circled up because the Indians are attacking the prairie people moving west. You always see it in the movies. The wagons always circle up as a defensive measure, and then the Indians keep running around the outside of the circle to give all of the white folk time to shoot all the Indians. You know, I often wondered before, but that's the way the movies always show it. I wonder, you think those Indians are really that dumb? We'll keep riding around until they kill us all off. Well, the real reason they did that is because the pioneers were using one-shot rifles, so if they shoot their wad, then the Indians could jump into the circle from the inside between the gaps in the wagons or over the tongue if they didn't put it up high enough, etc. So the first Indians on the inside got shot up, and then so that the other Indians could attack the rest of the pioneers. So get a picture in your eye, in your mind here, of pioneers hiding behind their wagon, and they all circled up, and the Indians circling all around, running around, howling and yelling. Most of them were howling and yelling because they were getting shot. Got that image there, Patrick?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Hold that image. Consider 1863, it's Gettysburg. Now we're talking about the Battle of Gettysburg, we're not talking about Lincoln's address, but, you know, I use Lincoln's address on here to describe insipid. Now I want to use Gettysburg, the battle, to describe Bucket Drop Living, or Bucket Drop Healing. So get this image in your mind. Here we got in Gettysburg. If they're shooting cannons at each other, shooting cannons directly, well, if they're doing that, which they did up on the ridge, and then the advancing men were kind of shot up a bit. But there was a problem with cannon in those days. If you couldn't see it, you couldn't shoot it. And if you saw it, it could probably shoot back. So cannoneering, or shooting cannons, artillery, wasn't really too safe. You shoot your wad in a cannon, by the time you load again, boy, God, they might be up all over your ass. Just like the Indians, when you're they circle up by the time you load up again. But even if they did, it's always dangerous. But the cannons didn't do any good if they couldn't see what they were shooting at. So that was kind of a problem. And the cannons weren't really that very accurate that way, so you just had to have a line of men to shoot into, or the cannons didn't do much. Well, okay, we're still talking about the history of Bucket Drop Healing, or Bucket Drop Living. 1864, the Siege of Atlanta. Cannons didn't do any good against Atlanta at all, because Atlanta had defenses, the cannon were one rather small shot, and number two is there were defenses, so you you just ended up shooting against the defenses. That didn't do any good. So they brought up these humongous mortars. Now a mortar shoots up in the air and then it lobs down, or lobs up in the air, and then it falls down on the other side of the defenses and sort of explodes on the other side of the defenses. Well, now you could have mortars do that and hide the mortars, and people couldn't see where the mortars were. But the mortars couldn't see what they were shooting at. They were lobbing up in the air, and then the mortar shell would just come down. And the mortars that they were using to make big explosions were big, huge, monstrous things. And you couldn't carry mortars out of the field so well at that time. So we got a problem going here. We can shoot things directly, but then everybody's exposed, or we can lob things at each other in life. And you're lobbing at things that you can't see, and they can't see you. You okay with this, Patrick? I mean, you got this picture?
Got this picture formed and there.
I'm trying to describe this, you know. I don't want to have any of this wordy shit. This is all describing. Okay, 1914, World War One. Airplanes then take over from mortars, fly over the enemy's positions, and pilots and co-pilots drop bombs out of airplanes. Not too accurate. But, you know, they're down there, so we'll drop our bomb down there. Somewhere. Well, it kind of worked, but wasn't very effective. Also in World War One, they were using artillery against entrenched forces. Well, the artillery couldn't see what they were shooting at. Of course, they were reasonably protected because the people in the trenches couldn't see necessarily the artillery either. But that wasn't very effective, so they just shot thousands or hundreds of thousands or millions of tons of explosives at each other, hoping that somehow or other something would hit something important. So using artillery in that regard, especially the artillery had gotten better than the Civil War cannons, such that the artillery could be way over yonder and shoot a mile away. But the artillery couldn't see what they were shooting at really very well. Shoot over there, George, and we'll send a guy out there to see how well it did. So you had to have forward observers. That's dangerous. Dangerous work. If you couldn't see the artillery, shoot the forward observers. Well, in World One, we could still use mortars, and mortars could be hidden, but mortars couldn't see what they were shooting at. But you couldn't see the mortars, so the mortars were protected. But it was still sort of a guessing game at what's going on. Got the picture there, Patrick? And I got nods at this end. We got Ann and Mark over here. How about you, Andrew? You got a picture going?
Pretty clear. Yep, pretty clear.
Well, about 1936, plus or minus a year or two. To improve all of this lobbing things or shooting things at each other, Alan Turing from Princeton created sort of a feedback device, and they could mount that on artillery shells so that you shoot the shell and the feedback device as such would sort of mark or change or monitor the flight of the shell, artillery shell. It was kind of like a self-correcting artillery shell. Of course, the problem with that was you had to know what you were shooting at. Because if you put in what you were shooting at, then the feedback tells you whether the course you were on had any chance of getting near the target. Wait a minute, let me back up here a minute right now. Speaking of living, if you believe that life is a process, not a destination, you're in deep, deep trouble. Well, can you understand? Turing then had to have a destination in order for his feedback system to work. And if you think life and your body, like the monitor screen on your computer, is a feedback system, okay, if it's going to work for you, feedback relative to what? You got to pump into this thing what your target is. So you damn well better have a destination. So if you really mean that life itself is a process and not a destination, I guess that's okay. Because if life is a process, that allows you to set any destination you want. But if you can't perceive of a destination for life and don't set a destination for yourself, then all of life's natural feedback systems don't do you any good. Then you're living life like a mortar. You're lobbing shells and you don't know, well, wait a minute, you know, that's kind of sort of like our healing system. We're lobbing things at cancer and we don't really know what is a target. Well, look at that lump there in that pretty little walk around cutie suit. That must be the target. So we'll focus on that and try to bombard that little lumpy thing and see if we can, well, wait a minute, maybe that's lobbing mortar shells in our healing system at the only thing we can see, but maybe that's not the target we'd be shooting. Hell, that's no much better than 1914. Well, look down there, drop a bomb. Look over there, there's a breast lump, drop a bomb. Maybe we need to consider some new healing. What we need is a bucket drop system. If we only knew what the hell that was all about.
Yeah, if we only did.
Yeah. Okay. Well, Turing's device got developed and called from artillery cells to a self-correcting device, and this became known as a Turing machine. And the Turing machine was led into computer technology. It was the beginning of computer technology. But again, it only worked in artillery shells if you knew what the hell you were doing, or at least what your aim was. Well, now we're coming into my time. Hey, 1938-39. I'll tell you about this because there's not anybody out there that's old as I am. Dive bombing. Y'all have heard or seen pictures of a Stuka dive bomber from Germany. Well, hey, you know, if you drop straight down and release your bomb and you aim the nose of the plane straight down at your target, I got a better chance in a Stuka to hit the target. And then just to scare the wee-wee out of you, they put whistles and stuff on the Stuka, so it made a terrible sound when it dived, and everybody knew that the bombs are coming. Well, that's okay if you're just bombing people that sort of can't shoot back at you, but when you're diving straight down, that's tough on the pilot, and it's pretty easy to shoot you down if you got a lot of people down there shooting back at you. Well, there were other things that they tried called skip bombing. The skip bombing was to release your bomb sort of horizontally and let the bomb sort of skip along the ground toward a target. And the Sukas went straight down. Even the regular dive bombing later on, the dive bombing wasn't really done like the Stuka. What you're doing with dive bombing, you're putting a horizontal motion onto the thing, so you really lose control of where the bomb's going. They were dumb bombs, not smart bombs. I know you guys may never have heard of dumb bombs. All you know is smart bomb. Okay, 1939 through 1945, they did a lot of carpet bombing. Wow, bomb everything. That worked, but it cost a lot of planes and a lot of airmen, and a lot of people got shot down. And then along came the Norden bomb sight, so we could bomb normally with a bomb sight that would calculate wind, drift, thrust, resistance, and try to get the bomb released at just the right place so it would land at just the right... Wait a minute. We keep doing healing like that, don't we? We're trying to get the thing to work just right at the target and do just the right thing at the right time, release it right in the right amount of the right dosage so the healing will work. Well, the Norden bomb sight sort of helped a little bit, but all it did was create in all of that more accurate carpet bombing. Bomb everything in the area. Well, there's a little bit of problem with that because AK-AK guns on the ground could shoot the planes. You need a lot of planes to do carpet bombing. But when they started in the war in 39 against Poland and all that, essentially the AK-AK was shooting dumb shells. Just like if I shoot a BB gun at something, or a 22, or a handgun 44, once I pull the trigger, I got no control of it. So then somebody like using Turing's artillery shells developed a proximity fuse. Hey, by the way, I'm talking about all this because my job in the service was Armament Test Center at Eglin Air Force Base. So I've been in dealing with these things later on, which we'll get into. I got to have fun with all this shit. So they developed a proximity fuse on AK-AK such that if the planes are flying at 30,000 feet, then the proximity fuse would go off at 30,000 feet. You didn't have to hit the plane. The fuse exploded because there were so damn many planes up there anyway that let the shell explode at the level of the planes, and you're bound to hit something. So AK-AK got to be pretty dangerous. Well, that was what happened 39 through 45. 1948, there came a call for Roger Cotting to go to Virginia Tech to be part of the Reserve Officers Training Corps. Well, it was a land-grant school, and I didn't have any choice unless you had an exception, like you'd been in the service or something like that, you go to Virginia Tech See, this is, I guess this is why they had all the big shooting there. It wasn't a gun-free place. We had a World War II rifle right in our room. Everybody in the barracks had one. We didn't have a clip of ammunition, but you could get a clip of ammunition, so everybody could have. We were armed to the teeth. A call came for Roger Cotting. We need help. Join the ROTC. Well, I did. Then there was, in 1950, the beginning of the Korean War. Cotting says, oh, I don't like that. This is shit. They shoot back. But I did want to be a pilot. They wouldn't let me be a pilot because my eyes were too bad, so I couldn't be a pilot. Okay, I'll join the paratroopers, 101st paratroopers. Doesn't it sound nifty like that? You know, you drop down in behind everybody. Let's see, the average life of a paratrooper in World War II on the ground was 9 minutes. I don't think that was too good. So I gave up paratrooping. I said, you know, I went 51, I said, you know, I think I'll get out of this military stuff. Which I did. But then I heard another calling. A life calling, sort of. Well, I thought it was a life calling. What it turned out to be, the draft board was calling me. They said they'll give you 30 days after you get out of school, and I want your ass. Middle of the Korean War. So I went back to school and said, hey, I'd like to get back in the ROTC. And I'm standing in front of a colonel, sort of shaking at the knees. The colonel says, well, Mr. Cotting, I look here at your records. Last year you said you had no interest in a commission in the Air Force. What all of a sudden changed your mind? I said, well, Colonel, there's no sense to fool you. I got a calling from the draft board that says I'll give you 30 days out of school, then I want you. Now, if I'm going in the service, I'd rather go in as an officer rather than an enlisted man. He kind of chuckled at that. It probably was the only true answer he'd gotten all day. They let me back in the ROTC. Hey, we're having fun here now. So I went back into the ROTC, and in 1952, I could hear that calling again. The calling was that they got us out of bed at 11 o'clock at night. Called us out of bed to swear us in as officers. That was a hell of a calling. And it was simply because Truman's emergency war powers ran out at 12 o'clock. And if they didn't get us in the service within the hour, we couldn't go in. Well, there's always a calling in life. We just have to answer the calling. So they made me a second lieutenant. Wow, hey, this is pretty neat. I probably was the only, because of that break I took out of ROTC and then the colonel let me back in, I may have been the first and maybe the only officer from ROTC that had never gone to summer camp. Never had a bunch of the training. Somehow, it skipped by somehow. This guy's never had all this training. Oh, hell, make him an officer. Make him a second lieutenant. No, they didn't do that. Some guy said, this guy is qualified. He's entitled to be a major. What? Sure, I went in the service. I heard this other calling. It says, we're going to give you an MOS. That's a military occupation specialty number. Okay, he says, you're qualified for this number. Let's call it 504. It was something like that. And it was, I had that MOS for, I don't know, 6 months or so. Then somebody came up and said, wait a minute here, this MOS is for a major. I said, that's fine, give me the rank. And they said, no, we think we'll take the MOS away from you. You're cheaper to us as a second lieutenant. You be a second lieutenant, and you have the qualifications and the MOS of a major, we'll use you as a major. And it's a hell of a sight cheaper for us to use you as a major. So I spent the time in the Air Force doing the work of a major as a second lieutenant, but I didn't have the rank, and I sure as hell didn't get paid. And what the hell does any of this have to do with bucket healing? Oh, I don't know. That's just fun. I was answering the calling. Is this okay, Patrick? I mean, what the hell? You didn't want anything deep and serious tonight, did you?
I guess not.
Well, yesterday we discussed alternatives versus options. Options give you freedom to do all sorts of things or to occur. And if you're not stuck with the goal, per se, of alternatives, if I'd have been stuck to that, you see, then I wouldn't have had this off again, on again, major, second lieutenant, all that. So, all of that was, I was awakening options in my life. In a sense, options give you the freedom not to just do one thing, but to do all sorts of things. And it gives you the freedom to sort of circle around. Whereas if you're doing alternatives, you're only dropping bombs and lobbing mortars at a target in your life. Maybe that's good, maybe that's not. Well, I guess sort of through all of this stuff going on that I must have had a destination, maybe not a target for my life, but I had a destination in mind, and so that all these weird things that go on were kind of circling around that destination. It's kind of like Turing's artillery shell, that without a target, the feedback system does not work. Yet, can you have a destination without necessarily a target? What?
Little mouse.
Oh, really?
It's about that big.
Yeah, well. So, now we're getting into considering this. Can you have a destination in your life without actually having a target? Or maybe if you don't even have a destination or are not aware of a destination, then you're kind of lobbing mortar shells at life, hoping for the best. And if you've got a problem and want to deal with how do we deal with your pains, your problems, and illnesses if we don't have a target or a destination? Well, without a feedback in your life will be of no value or understanding. So you can say, oh, look, my body pains. Oh, fine. What does that say about how you're living your life? Hell, I don't know. I don't have a destination. I don't have a target. I don't know. If you did have a target or a destination, then maybe you would say, you ain't doing too well, or you're off course, or you're just living life as a process or a journey. A journey to where? Well, wherever you end up, like lobbing mortar shells. So in order for life's feedback system to work, whether that's the events in your life reveal the self and life you are living regardless of what you think you are living, the events in your life or the events in your body are a feedback system, but telling you what, where are you going? You don't know. We developed a descriptionary for healers as a sort of a way to describe the feedback system. Okay? Well, that may reveal that if your body is this doing this illness and functioning that way, then maybe that gives us feedback. But I don't really have a whole, if I don't have a target in mind, then what do I know that the feedback system is telling me? So we added paragraph after paragraph after paragraph after paragraph of questions, so that with each client or each patient, we could ask them questions. It's kind of like India throughout the whole thing. It's like Indians circling around the wagons. Maybe the answers to the questions would be circling around the problem, and from that circling around the problem, we could sort of see or create a destination for the healing process. The target might be the organ, the problem, the pain, the difficulty, the place in the body, but the destination could come from understanding how the patient answers the questions. There is a constancy or consistency in their answers. They begin to reveal the destination that they are living, or the destination even that they're hoping for. Okay? I'm getting so much feedback from the electronic device here, Mark, so you and I might just as well talk together in the hell with them.
Yeah, that's fine.
We're here.
Wait a minute.
There's
can't
some,
hear
there's
you,
some
Andrew.
People down there.
We're here, sitting right over the phone.
Well, you're supposed to jump in and ask questions whenever I'm talking serious.
All right, I got a question. Are you going to explain what this bucket drop thing is yet? Because I just don't know the term.
I don't care if you know the term. I'm asking you, regardless of whether you know the term, it is, can you stay focused on what I'm saying? Why do you have to rush yet to bucket drop? Because I mentioned it in...
Yeah, earlier you said something about I wish we had a bucket drop thing, and I thought maybe I missed what you said, that's all.
No. All right. I only want you to say, I did that internally. I said, I'm merely asking you which name sort of appeals to you. Begin Again Therapy. Or Bucket Drop Healing. That's all I asked you. And now I'm back, circling up the wagons. Using the scriptionary merely to circle the wagon. And then maybe in that I can see the destination in your life that you're looking for or struggling with and against, rather than my dealing only with the target of the cancer or the lupus or the heart attack or whatever. Science wants a silver bullet. Our healers want a silver bullet, like an artillery shell. Go get us a Alan Turing, so that he could devise a device that we can add to our healing, so we can get directly to the point, and all of our healing processes or alternatives in that regard would be using the feedback system to, well, we got smart bombs now where we're doing better. we hit the target, but maybe the target isn't the destination.
I was thinking about the options and, but what's the other word? Alternatives. And the destiny came up to me that if you have alternatives, it's like there's a predestined thing. You don't really have a choice. And so anyway, that just the idea of that it's, I mean, it just came up as a...
Well, we set alternatives based on the target. We're lobbing mortar shells based on a target. We're trying to have artillery shells and bombs based on a specific target. But the target you see may not be the destination that you want to deal with, or the illness or the healing that you want to deal with. So somehow or other, it seems to me, need to deal or want to deal with not only what we see, but a way that we can find out about the destination for our healing. In other words, if you maybe you've set a destination and haven't really seen or understood that, and so the pain and problems in your life and the ailments in your life is simply because it doesn't seem that what you are doing is what you ever wanted. And yet, it seemed for me, in all of this, that getting into the service, getting out of the service, or getting into ROTC, getting out of ROTC, getting back into ROTC, doing any of this, getting into the service, second lieutenant, all of this thing, maybe there is a way of understanding the destination of you rather than just a wild-ass process, or maybe it's taking what seems to be a process and turning it into a destination that makes all the difference in the world. And then maybe the feedback system is telling you something from the life you lived after the fact. Well, that's essentially the concept of the descriptionary, so that we can then circle up the wagons, and maybe what we're targeting in an illness, for instance, if you have a heart attack, is that really the target we want to deal with? We can say, like I meant to make sure everybody understood, healers, yeah, you can deal with the heart attack directly, and you probably should, but if you want to circle up and find out the destination of the person or the concept of the person or whatever, using targeting in your healing may actually mislead you. All alternatives require a target. And you then focus back already and only upon the target, while the questions in the descriptionary are intended to circle up your mind and awarenesses and the patient's mind and awarenesses around maybe the real target is way over there. Maybe you need to deal with both. Maybe you've got two targets to deal with here, but you only see one by having, and I'll describe this, you having the freedom of not looking at the illness target per se, then talk about or understand the destination target of the individual. Got that all right, Karen?
Yep, I'm here.
So the descriptionary questions are trying to allow you to encircle the destination just like the Indians. And of course, some of your questions, you're going to get shot down, just like some of the Indians got shot off. But, and part of that is because you've circled up your life and are hiding behind that circle, probably just like the pioneers did, to protect yourself. But if we find the destination, then we can use healing as it is today, as a targeted response, and then you, in using the words and stuff of the descriptionary, begin to create or see or understand the destination the person is living or struggling with or against. So I didn't mean for you healers to think that my circling up or trying to create a destination or there was a substitute for the way and the manner you heal. This was kind of add on. Massage therapy and bucket drop healing. Well, where the hell did this bucket drop healing crap come from? It came from Alaska.
That when they drop a bucket from a plane with all the gear that you need?
The problem was always this. There's a lot of how many people do you think have, wherever you want to go, a convenient runway right nearby? So if you want to drop supplies to hunters out in the bush, to crash victims out in the bush, what do you do? Well, I guess you could just drop it. That's kind of like dive bombing. And the luck of hitting where the people are is pretty piss poor. Because you have the plane's forward motion on the action of whatever you drop out of the plane. Well, that didn't do much good. Well, okay, let's carpet bomb the whole damn place with packages on parachutes. That'll get them. Well, maybe not, because coming down in a parachute, then the wind blows it all over here, and not very accurate. It's a waste of supplies lots of times. It hits the ground. Maybe it ends on the other side of the river, which they couldn't get to anyway. So somebody says, how about us, we try bucket dropping. Now what the hell is bucket dropping from Alaska? Well, a guy says, look, if an airplane you know what drafting, everybody here knows what drafting is. In the Iron Man, you can't do it on a bike. You sneak up behind a guy. If you're there more than a few minutes, you're drafting because of the guy in front of you creates,
he's doing all the work.
He's doing all the work because he's creating a negative behind him and blocking off some of the air that you would otherwise have to be pushing into, but the negative behind him sucks you along. If you're there more, if you're behind somebody, riding behind him, and in the zone of drafting, you can be disqualified very quickly. So, you don't do that. Okay, that means drafting is a obvious part of moving through air. The guy says, look, supposing what we do is in the airplane up there, the airplane just circles around and around and around over where the people are that we want to drive. We can't land there, and we want to just circle over them. When the plane does that, it creates a vortex because of its constantly circling, just like a tornado. And in that, then, the airplane can feed out a bucket on a line of whatever supplies you had. Bucket, because it could be in the bucket, or it could be attached to a line. And as the plane circles 1,500, even 1,000 feet or so, circles in a constant pattern, and the tighter the circle, the better the vortex. And whether you realize it or not, the vortex of the plane up at 1,000 feet or so goes right down to the ground. as a, it's kind of like a negative drafting behind a bicycle. Well, when you start out and you're dragging this bucket or object, whatever you want to, medicine, food, whatever you want to drop to the people down below, on the line, it sort of flies around with the airplane. Until finally it finds the vortex that the airplane is creating, and if you then feed out more line, the bucket or the package at the end of the line just follows the vortex right to the ground. Fact is, you can have a guy down on the ground and you can drop it to him as if you were 5 feet above him and you handed him a package. Wow. Skip bombing didn't work sometimes. Like, drop it here and hope for the best. Well, drop it way over there and the package will skip bomb and come to the rest of that where they are. Well, shit, that didn't work too well. It's kind of tough on the whatever you're trying to drop down there, too. And parachuting often didn't work. It got maybe stuck in a tree or got blown across the valley or wherever. This guy came up with bucket drop. Well, bucket drop healing is much the same thing, with options, and we keep it circling, and in this case with a description area with questions, we keep circling and circling and circling and circling, and if the right questions are asked, we create a vortex, in a sense, to a destination of what the patient really, really, really wants, that the illness may say, or reveal as a feedback system. They're not, now the illness makes sense. The patient thought that this was the target, this is what he wanted, and all of a sudden by circling up with questions, like the airplane, you get enough questions going, you create a vortex and we find out what the patient really, truly desired as a destination, and we can drop the healing bomb right down upon where the patient needs the help the most, where they're standing. Everybody getting all of this now? Can I interject here?
Yeah. It's quite amazing. I've never heard of bucket dropping. Neither has the dog.
What was that?
It was someone's dog.
I thought that was your dog. Oh, that was probably Sharon's dog.
It's Sharon's dog. I'm going back on mute.
That's all right, Sharon. He just recognized all Pat's voice and woo, 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 woo.
That's right.
So the question is, well, let's assume that. So now what I'm saying is, in the same sort of way what the description area was doing in this regard, is moving to options in such a way that by the patient answering the questions, they actually do create a vortex which allows us to, in a sense, zero in on what the real illness is. Now, that's of course based on the fact that the illness that you target bomb is in the body, and the illness that we bucket drop on to is in the blue gloved hand. And if we're going to solve a problem in all of this, we have to deal with the hand as well as the body. And just talking about body questions, or even thinking only relative to body questions, doesn't really give us blue hand answers. And it doesn't also then give the patient blue hand understandings, maybe as to what it is they can do, should do, ought to do, might do, etc., relative to a destination. You can say, well, gee, through all this vortex and bucket dropping or bucket drop healing, I'm creating another, I am seeing in you the destination you are creating, even if you didn't know you were doing it. If you're living by alternatives and say, I must live by God's way, its way, that way, etc., maybe we can say, well, we can look at that, maybe that's not the target you want. But if you're not doing that, if we deal only with alternatives, the likelihood is you're struggling against that particular beginning story or story of your life. That doesn't help us a whole lot, but through bucket drop questioning and answering and healing and living and lifing, it seems that the constancy, now rather than the constancy and consistency creating a thread, which is good, it does, and we can understand that, the commonality of thread, you can then begin to see, well, wait a minute, maybe all of this is kind of leading you along, sucking you along like a hurricane in a vortex of a destination that you've either declared by accident or are living it by drafting it. So there it is. This is the same of all of this is true of healing or in solving problems. But if you believe then that life is a process and you just do ordinary chaotic things, or I'll live as I want, I'll just be, I'll do as I want in that regard, then though you probably don't realize it, you are creating in that, living that, creating a destination, a target destination for yourself. And in fact, it is a, you've created in that then a vortex of actions or of avoidance or actions of creation, which create a vortex and just drag you along whether you knew it or not. Okay, that's called bucket drop healing or bucket drop therapy, which is also begin again, because then we, if I follow that process to the vortex you are creating and getting yourself sucked into, then we have a, we can, you can stop that vortex in that regard. Well,
it would also be optioning, wouldn't it?
That's the point. Because there is no beginning target which alternatives follow. But
right,
it's creating its own target, or the vortex is creating its own destination as it goes along, because options are free of a target to start with.
Right. So alternativing would be trying to drop the stuff right on the people while you fly over, or carpet bombing or something.
So you're trying it in massage, somebody else tries it in another way. These are just alternatives to fight against alternatives. And you may say that you're not living the life or the target you wanted in your life, or that you should have a target in your life. Well, this is maybe true for that type of healing and that of the body. But what about the blue hand? Maybe the blue hand really, if we even go beyond the blue hand, is it possible that there is a hand beyond the blue hand that is vortexing in such a way that the vortexing sucks them along to a destination and not a target per se. Is that okay?
Yep.
So what if each lifetime then is a vortex? You circle it up this way, that way, and like a plane going around and around and around to create the vortex. Is it possible that we do this sort of in each lifetime with each circle? And is there, can we then say there is in that a vortex that we are creating that reveals a destination? Or are we purposefully creating the vortex itself to suck us to that destination? You can imagine the difference here, that if I set that destination, or in most ways make that as a declaration, which is true, then we send that target, we put that target, lay that target onto our life, and then we cause an effect to reach that target. There are alternative ways of doing that. What freedoms might you have in bucket drop living, in realizing then the vortex you're creating by what you are doing? You are creating both the vortex of your life, the destination of your life, and sucking you to, in that, maybe a destination that is far different or other than you think you have targeted. Well, that's the part of options that we didn't get into yesterday.
You should ponder in the bath more often, Roger. You should ponder in the bathtub more often. You get good info.
Well, I already had the info.
Oh,
it's just
okay.
We didn't get into it yesterday because we got our so trapped into arguing against, can I see the difference between alternatives and options, and then trying to illustrate that in that way. So I thought I would, all I was doing here writing was, maybe I could give you a pic. Is there something back there that's...
I'm just looking at Misty.
Oh, she back there? Oh, I thought maybe I could give you sort of a history description that you could then relate to in this way. And since when I was in the service in dealing with the same stuff, my first job in the service was testing 3.54 folding fin rockets. You know, during the Korean War, the airplanes, the jet planes shot off rockets from the wings of the airplane. They didn't do that in World War II. They didn't have that. And so my first job was get involved in testing those rockets so that you knew what the target was, how well did the rocket perform. And we got into little things like this. A Scorpion airplane used during Korean War had two 20-millimeter cannons in the nose of the airplane. Well, the angle of attack of a Scorpion on a target, when he shot off the cannon, the plane actually outflew the cannon, and there were more than one Korean pilot shot himself down.
Korean pilots?
Huh?
A Korean pilot? You mean?
No, I mean pilots during the Korean War. They outflew the cannon shells.
They ran into their own.
And they ran into their own shells and shot the airplane down. We were. That was just one other thing we were dealing with. But see, all of that then finally coalesces into the whole thing of the descriptionary. The whole, all of that that I was doing, and I watched cowboy and Indian movies, and the Indians always circle around the wagon. And in a sense then, we can say, as for me, that's the history of bucket drop healing. Circling around to see what, if you don't have, like if we talk to Ann and say, what is your destination in life? And Ann says, well, hell, I don't know. But the point of it is, you are circling the wagons, circling the planes, creating a vortex and getting sucked into this destination, whether you believe it or not. And maybe that's not a destination you want, or maybe it's not a destination you are convinced is wrong, but maybe it is right. But somebody else says you it's wrong, you shouldn't do that. It's kind of like getting out of the ROTC and getting back in. So I don't have a whole lot more to say tonight. If you guys want to ask questions about optioning and alternatives and bucket drop healing and anything, otherwise I've given you a picture. Deal with it. I guess they already went to sleep. We succeeded.
Everybody understands the bucket drop now.
Well, it's a good image. So, Raj, just real quick question. So, as would we say that options are always pretty much a blue hand thing?
I think they are pretty much blue hand thing. Yeah, I think mostly in our body, we kind of set our goals with every action, and then try to cause those goals or try to reach those goals, and the illnesses, pains, problems, and illnesses in your physical body and life are what we're dealing with most of the time, but the options that we're talking about here in this way is we're creating, with our hand, we're creating, and if you want to understand this, man, you've got to understand how might the hand be creating the vortex from life to life to life to life, and what does that mean?
So when we were stuck with alternatives yesterday, or like any time maybe we're stuck in life with something like a causal outcome or a consequence or something, does pulling it apart to look at a body and a blue hand, do you find that helpful?
I think it's absolutely necessary. But like the descriptionary, the front part describes the action of the illness in the body, and then we talk about the problem or illness in your life. And we're looking at what vortex are you actually living or desiring, and et cetera, or struggling with or struggling against.
Right. Yeah, just kind of frustrated a little bit. I mean, not badly, but it's just like slap on the head. Like, why didn't I think of that yesterday in that conversation? But it makes perfect sense.
But I didn't want the healers to think that what we were talking about in terms of options and don't ask this question or don't go there, etc. Healers are, in a sense, using the objective or target of alternatives for the understanding or healing or easing the body problems in a way against the or trying to find out the vortex, but in a sense we're trying to find another target to then cure, heal, or whatever, rather than understand the vortex you're sucking yourself into.
So So then, right, then it all ends up working against everybody, the healer and the patient and all that, right?
I'm not too sure I understand what you say, but I'll just say right.
Well, I'm just saying if we're constantly looking to get the outcome or heal the patient, then I'm saying everybody...
Then you're targeting what you're doing. You're not living options, and you're not dealing with maybe the patient is optioning more than targeting, and you may be leading yourself into a restricted, as we've said before, relief of symptoms, but not dealing with the person, the blue hand inside the puppet.
There's no room for emergent to happen when you're dealing with alternatives.
That's right.
Right.
And this then is all emergent. You're only you're creating a vortex by all of your free options in that way. But in a sense, then, if you imagine, if you've got an image of this, imagine that the plane circles and circles and circles, or your life circles and circles and circles, only in terms of the actions that you truly desire to do, then the vortex you create and the emergent self you create from that is one you truly desire.
Very useful.
Well, it's just an image.
Good one.
Amen.
Well, since everybody had a busy week and a long flight, if I don't have any more questions, we'll quit right there.
Did you hear me?
Have a comment?
I didn't hear you.
Hello. Karen's trying to talk.
I'm ready.
All right.
Okay.
Yeah, I had ears in, but I took my ears out. Is it better with the ears or without them?
I don't know.
Without.
Without.
Okay. I had a lot of stuff coming yesterday afternoon when I returned home, and I think it profoundly changed me in the sense that I didn't change. I saw me.
Well, that's kind of like vortexing that we're talking about here. That's what I was trying to do. There's a fine line between optioning and vortexing, or alternatives and creating a target.
I realized how much I dropped bombs all through my practice, because that is the nature of practicing medicine, is to drop a lot of bombs.
That's right. It's either dropping bombs or lobbing mortar shells.
And hoping something might land in the right place without killing the person.
That's right. That's absolutely correct.
Welcome to the world of medicine.
Yeah. But it required, I think, really looking at me and looking at the fact how much I even deny me, how much I even deny why it is that I was in your class.
But not necessarily. I don't really think that is. It's kind of looking at the various actions, say, of each person over that 9 days, and what vortex has that created? Maybe then that shows you to what you the destination or so that you truly desire. You see?
Of course, but I was denying that.
Well, we all do, if for no other reason than our beginning story, but more than that, this life is a process, not a destination. And if you really understand that question or that statement, life is that way, not a destination, so that you can declare or discover through vortexing the destination that obviously suits you.
Right.
Now the question is, that once you understand the vortex destination that you truly desire and declare that, just like the plane, you then fly in circles, tighter and tighter circles around that destination and create a stronger and stronger vortex.
Okay. That'll be interesting to watch.
Yeah. Well, you can call that begin again, like every circle of the airplane, begin again healing, or I really do, but when I put it up on a sign and say massage therapist and bucket drop healing, it would tickle me, but for most people, they would probably run the other way.
Well, I'll give you one example of something that happened to me today. My first client to show up has had some problems in her upper GI area, gastrointestinal area, like the pancreas. And she has some radiating pain into the shoulder, which is a common thing to radiate to the shoulder, especially if there's a problem there. And so she came in today, and I asked her, how's your family? She says, oh, fine, everything's perfect. And I said, well, how's your relationship? And she said, oh, fine, it's all just fine. And I said, then how's your relationship with yourself? And she burst out in tears. And she said, I can't stand myself. I hate myself. And so we proceeded to talk about that.
So you can see then in that your body is living a terrible, most of us, and our body takes all the views of our life and lives a terrible life. By pulling it apart, we can now say, set the body over here, and now let's talk about you and your life as a blue hand.
I really got that I have to truly be in me and do the unfamiliar, do what doesn't feel mundane, like everything I've always done.
That's
do
right.
What I know is the way I saw it yesterday afternoon, it's the red lights on the runway. It keeps me on the path. And when I go off the runway, I feel very uncomfortable.
And that's because we're in the habit of cause and effect, setting the goal, and even if we say, no, I don't care about the outcome, that's not true, because the actions you do are based on the intentions you want to cause or create in the end. And it really is that once you, all the body, you can get information from the body because of the illness, but that has to be applied to the blue hand, not the body.
Right.
You keep doing your normal body healing on the one hand. What we used to say years ago in that regard is to befool the mind, because he's got pain, upper GI stuff, neck, back, whatever, stop. Okay, we're going to befool the mind. The mind thinks it's the body. We befool
right.
the mind by easing the body so that we can deal with, because as I've said before, your body has a mind and so do you. But it gets to the point where your mind thinks it is the mind of the body, so what happens in the body disturbs the mind. We befool the mind, now we can talk like you did with this gal to the blue hand.
Yeah.
And it is then that starts making a not a whole or complete necessarily in and of itself picture or image or healing. But it becomes so obvious that doing less than that either cannot cannot succeed, or succeeds only in relieving problems for a period of time.
Yep.
Well, good. Your patients are benefiting by the moment.
I actually think that's true.
That's right.
I think that you the whole class, the fact that I had to face the fact that I was denying that I was actually in your class because I do believe in internal living, but how the hell does that happen?
And then how the hell do we see that, and how the hell can we deal with that? First of all, we have to separate that it's not necessarily an internal happening. Just it is, but it isn't, because it's blue handing. And the blue.
Well, I don't even have how it happens, because the fact is, I know it's possible.
Yeah.
It's possible.
Yeah, but I meant it isn't. Oh, the blue hand. My illustration is limited to the blue hand is inside the puppet. No, no, no. The blue hand is inside the puppet. And all around the puppet, as in aura, which we didn't really get into at all, which I've done a whole gathering on auras. So when you separate the body over here, then we can see the blue hand that is, in a sense, within, but it is all around as well.
I think that not seeing my own blue hand and the pattern and the repetition and the stuckness of what's happened to me in this lifetime, not being able to see that is the blockage that prevents me from sharing that.
I don't agree with that, really, Sharon. I understand where you're coming from, but if I fly circles around the patient, I don't have to know all about myself. If I can do that and
yes,
see the patient's vortex, I don't have to know myself.
Well, yeah, it's not. That's not the relevant part. I guess it was what I meant was, you know, the what life presents is kind of being off the runway, and it feels uncomfortable all the time. It feels uncomfortable, and then when you find that information, all of a sudden it becomes in the center of the runway with the lights on the sides that we kind of just show you.
Well, that's right. But it can be, you can see there essentially is no cause and effect. It is strictly emergent. The vortex, you didn't cause the vortex per se. All the pilot does is fly around. Or you don't cause a vortex by asking questions.
No.
Where we're so accustomed to cause and affecting, and this is the target I'm trying to affect, we get ourselves askew.
I don't know that I'm truly aware the runway even existed.
Okay.
If you get what I mean. I know I've heard it from you. I know I believed it. And until I found that space and felt that, being truthful to myself at looking at what your class is all about and what I've done in the practice of medicine by doing what is the expected, but that feels like being off the runway to me because it's a sensation that's very uncomfortable. It doesn't really fit.
Well,
and that's
okay. Well, that's why we started with jumping and flapping, because we're so attuned to doing things one way. Just, you don't have to know all of the answers, just try it. And in that you begin experiencing, even if you don't know exactly what you're doing in that regard, you start creating your own awareness and destination for yourself.
Well,
Okay, well, go forth and create a vortex that'll suck you in. A desirable vortex and get sucked in.
Karen, this is Sally.
Yes.
I can't go to sleep tonight without a furry thing on my bed.
Oh, she's taking that nap here on the couch next to me.
You need a bunny.
Yeah. Hey.
Anyway, give a big...
Sally?
You guys later. Yeah.
Okay.
Ann says you need a fuzzy wuzzy bunny.
Oh, no, I'm okay. I want it alive and moving around.
Oh.
He's all nice and warm.
Well, now, what were you guys doing in there with the door closed?
Letting the dog jump from bed to bed.
Oh. That's right.
You go over there and kiss her and then come back and say, did you see that?
Okay, well.
Thanks for everything, Misty and Roger and everybody else. That was really an awesome gathering.
Well, thanks. Thank you guys. Then with that, unless we don't have Simone, she hadn't gotten home yet. God, I'm glad I wasn't flying back to Switzerland.
Yeah.
Okay. See you next Monday.
Sure.
Bye now.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Thanks, Roger.
Yep.
Everyone.